The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
On the topic of always a pleasure, another person it's always a pleasure to talk to is Andrew Hunter Murray. Andrew, of course, best-selling author of some novels of extraordinarily unusual plot lines, as in, you know, what if the world stopped spinning, and how to break and enter profitably. Well, not so much profitably as a housing approach. Anyway, apart from all of that, he has been a regular and host on the podcast No Such Thing as a Fish. This as a function of the fact that he was previously a QI elf on the fabulous QI TV show for something to the order of 14 years. Andrew, how are you?
I'm great. I'm fine. Thanks, Anton. How are you?
I'm good. I'm always thinking before you come on, what's the likelihood of finding something that Andrew is unfamiliar with, but that I enjoy and that he might like? So I thought I'd start with the juvenile sea squirt.
With what?
With the juvenile sea squirt. Are you familiar with the juvenile sea squirt?
Oh, this is my Achilles heel, clearly. No, I'm not.
I think you'll like it. The juvenile sea squirt is who we should all aspire to be. I've never seen a picture of him, so I don't know what he looks like, but I do know that he exists. And when he is born, he has a brain, right?
Okay.
And he uses that brain to guide his navigation to find a new place to live. And once he finds a new place to live, he attaches himself to the rock and eats his brain because he doesn't need it anymore.
That's the home ownership dream, isn't it?
Isn't that just life?
You check out. I'm well along that process now. I've got about maybe a third of my original brain left, but I'm hoping to shift it all within the next few years. Yeah.
Well, you know,
that's brilliant.
Do you know about the male anglerfish?
I do. Oh. I love the male anglerfish. This is the one where he's tiny. The female's huge.
Correct.
She's
massively
about 20
so.
Times his size. Yeah, yeah. And when they mate, he will just latch onto her side with his teeth. And slowly, over time, he dissolves into her body, basically. All of him, you know, his brain, his teeth, his bones, his fins, everything. And I think at the end, all that's left is a little... forgive me, it's a Sunday morning, pair of testicles dangling off the side. And I think some older female anglerfish have quite a few pairs of these just sort of dangling off as reminiscences of their former flings.
It's like the John Lennon quote, those of you down the front, just rattle your jewellery.
Oh, I never know what we're going to talk about, Anton, but I'm thrilled. Well, so the Michelin thing you were just talking about is so bizarre, because we did Michelin on the podcast a few weeks ago.
Oh, do tell.
Yeah, it was exactly as you were talking about with your guest there, that you're likelier to go bust. The best way to actually put your rival restaurateur out of business is to get him a Michelin star, or her, because it's a nightmare. It sounds like the dog that caught the car. It sounds really stressful.
Well, this is it, because, I mean, that was the thing that the Raymond Blanc quote, where because it brings your popularity. I mean, literally, if you apply the old guide logic of it's worth a detour or it's worth a special destination.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Suddenly you get an influx of people who squeeze out the locals, and the locals don't come back once their squoze out and believe you're expensive. And then if they take away the star, boom goes your entire operation.
I know, nightmare. But they did, I love this fact, Michelin helped slightly with the Second World War for the Allied cause, because all the officers who landed at Normandy in 1944 on D-Day had copies of the 1939 Michelin guide on them, because those are the best maps of Europe. And those are the most recent. Yeah. And that was, you know, I mean, you had obviously no computerized maps. No one had been there providing accurate information about what it was like. I suspect they removed the restaurants from the guide before handing them out so that it didn't hold up the advance to Berlin or anything. You know, well, we just have to, this is worth a detour, actually, this place, you know. I love that fact.
The other one that I like about that period of the Second World War was Patton's inflatable tanks.
Are these the decoy ones?
Isn't that amazing?
It's so cool. It's amazing. Yeah. They had them kind of just to make aerial reconnaissance think that there was
correct.
A huge army.
My understanding, and I'm no historian, is that the Nazis just wouldn't believe that they fired Patton for slapping somebody because he was otherwise so competent and really there's a war on. So they used him to create an entirely false army up in Scotland, and to sell the false army, they made blow-up tanks that the lads used to carry around the fields to make them look like they were on operations.
It's a bit of a demotion, isn't it? You know, we're not firing you, General Patton, but your army is now an inflatable one.
Well, it could be worse. Like, imagine being the guy who has to carry the tank. On the one hand, you're not going to Normandy. On the other hand, what do you tell the kids when the war is over?
Oh my goodness. Yeah. So this is what we've been up to on the pod recently, is kind of all of the above.
Is there anything on your list that you have yet to do that you're looking forward to?
Is this my life list or my podcast list?
I'm willing to do either, Andrew. Would you, if you feel like opening up, I'll follow you.
There's so much. The thing is, we started the podcast 10 years ago. We've been doing once a week for 10 years. And we had no idea when we started that there were this many things in the world to talk about and discuss. And, you know, we thought for a while we were going to run out. And then we slowly became aware, no, we will just find more stuff. There are so many people around the world doing interesting things. Interesting science, interesting culture, interesting history, that we feel like it can just go forever now. So, and the nice thing is, we're all, you know, all four of us have different interests. So Dan is very interested in the Loch Ness Monster. James likes golf. Anna likes sport. I like a lot of military history, which is a bit embarrassing. It's very dad. But we, you know, we tolerate each other's foibles very well. And so there's always room. No matter what we want to discuss, there's room.
I have a problem with this, Andrew. Because sport, I can understand.
Yeah.
Military history, I can not only understand, I can subscribe to. Because both of those are things. The Loch Ness Monster is not a thing.
Dan Schreiber, my very beloved colleague, is a huge fan of cryptozoology. He will find, he doesn't believe it himself, but he loves knowing that people do believe it, if you know what I mean. So he's interviewed, do you remember Nicholas Witchell, the former BBC Royal correspondent?
Yes.
He started out as a Nessie hunter. he spent years living on the banks of Loch Ness before giving up and covering the British royal family, who I presume are also slightly... You know, they're weird and slightly mythical and
it's hard to spot.
They're good for tourism, but basically what do they do? So that's the premise. Yeah, no, that's Dan's great passion in life. So
Does every culture, you would be the man to know this, does every culture or geographical area have an equivalent of a Nessie or an abominable snowman or one of those? Is it one of those things that naturally occurs in human societies?
I think so. I don't think there's anything in Southeast London. I mean, I have, you know, I'll keep my eyes open, but I haven't found anything like that. Yeah, I mean, what's the Irish equivalent?
Well, I'll give you the I suppose we have, there are things like banshees and all the rest of it, but the one that I liked best was Éanann Ní Leabhar. If you are unfamiliar with Éanann Ní Leabhar, you should look her up. Dr. Éanann Ní Leabhar, she is an environmentalist. She was on with this yesterday. But two of the things I discovered from her: are you familiar with bog gas spontaneously exploding?
No, I'm not.
this is a thing that happens in Ireland. Bog gases, in whatever way they can combine, can appear as a blue flame hanging above the bog, about 18 inches above it. They just appear, flame for a bit, and then disappear.
Wow.
Can you imagine being in medieval Ireland and it's a quiet night and you suddenly see a ball of flame?
Amazing. It's the most rational explanation is that it's paranormal, something paranormal.
Oh, of course, the gods are angry. That's still the right. That's where I'd go right now.
Well, this is weird because I'm reading. I don't know why I'm reading Bleak House, right? Which is because I'm a big Dickens fan. I don't know why. I'm a Dickens fan, and I studied English literature, and you know, I think he's great, but it's long. But there is one moment.
He got paid by the word, and you'd know it in every one of his books.
I know. I should be reading it one chapter a month, like would have happened originally. But there we go. I'm a glutton for punishment.
But you also had scurvy and no electric light, so you know, there wasn't much else on.
You've seen the state of my fruit bowl. Exactly. Yeah. But there's a bit in it where, this is a mild spoiler, but one of the characters in it spontaneously combusts. And it's the most weird move any novelist has ever made. Like, this is Charles Dickens we're talking about. And it's just a plot device because some papers need to be discovered or, you know, not discovered or whatever. And so it's just like he went, oh, screw it. Let's just have him burst into flames. And he writes at the start of the book a little like passive-aggressive chapter saying, I have actually spoken to a lot of scientists. They all assure me this can happen. It's amazing. It's glorious. It's worth reading that for that alone, yeah.
Explain to me how a grown man can reread Dickens, who, and I'm going to go out on a limb here, is very dull, and not finish Moby Dick. Have you yet finished Moby Dick? You admitted publicly to not having finished Moby Dick.
I've barely started Moby Dick.
A whale.
It's got a whale, but it's got long chapters on the whaling industry, hasn't it, as well?
What's wrong with long chapters in the whaling industry? Did you know? No, can I tell this one at this time in the morning? No, I probably can't. You could look it up. What?
Aristotle Onassis's yacht.
No, tell me about Aristotle Onassis's yacht.
No, I'm not sure that's decent for this time of morning
God
either.
Damn it.
The stools on his bar, the sort of bar stools in his yacht were supposedly made of a very specific bit of whale's anatomy.
Well, this is interesting because that's where my fact comes in as well.
Apparently,
if we're talking about the same bit of the anatomy, they used to use it once flayed as a smock because it was full length and would keep the worst of what you were getting in blubber splash off you.
Yes, I think male whales have one of these, but not Jewish male whales. Are we on the same?
We have arrived.
In a perfectly decent manner. Yeah.
Well, this is a career highlight for me, Andrew.
Oh, dear. What were we talking about?
The other cool thing, did you know that a whale washed up in Nantucket? This is about, this isn't a whale washed up in Nantucket. And it washed up on the beach and they discovered that they had nothing to take it apart because whale taking apart tools are not as common in Nantucket as they once were. So they had to go to the museum and remove decades, if not 100-year-old whale flaying devices and hack it to bits with the museum accoutrement.
Goodness. That is very sinister.
Is there anything, Andrew, that you would like to mention other than the anatomy of a whale that might be commercially viable or valuable for you?
I suppose I should, yes. No, I should mention the book that came out last year. And we're in a funny interregnum. Yes. The bit in between the hardback and the paperback coming out. But the paperback is coming out relatively soon. So it's called A Beginner's Guide to Breaking and Entering. And it's just like that juvenile sea squirt. It's about a guy who moves in, takes possession of other people's homes. He has got a brain, but it's a lot of...
I have to say, it is highly entertaining and worries me greatly about the level of research that you must have put into it. I got given out to once for using an interregnum because I was told that it only related to monarchs.
Yeah.
I believe it has come to general colloquial usage.
Yeah, language is for usage, not for prescription. You know, language is, we can muck around with language. We can change it.
On that note.
If we use interregnum enough, it'll get out there.
Always a joy. Andrew, thank you so much. That is Andrew Hunter Murray and the paperback edition of A Beginner's Guide to Breaking and Entering, available online on all good bookshops now.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.